In H-minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. Hello, hello. It is Saturday, the 29th of October in the glorious future year of 2022. And I am coming to you from my home studio in Fort Worth, Texas. And I will be coming to you from my home studio in Fort Worth, Texas, Tuesday. And then as soon as my show gets over Tuesday, that's Hear Now the Words at 15 hours UTC, Tuesdays and Fridays, which usually I'm reading old science fiction or something else I find interesting. Basically, if you like to listen to the sound of my voice, but aren't thrilled about whatever it is I come up with to say and want me to read words someone else has written, Hear Now the Words is the show for you. Anyhow, as soon as I finish with that show on Tuesday, I will be leaving here and going to the airport to get on an aeroplane for an international flight which will take me to Munich, capital of the Free State of Bavaria in southern Germany, and I will be coming to you from there for the next few weeks. And I expect things there to be interesting. Interesting in what way? Well, you know, people are already finding that the heat and power bills are higher than rent and very difficult to pay. People there are already losing their livelihoods as businesses close down. Small proprietors and their employees, but also the employees of large industrial concerns. There are companies that have been in business for generations that are shutting down because of high fuel prices, because of unreliability of supply. So people are feeling very insecure right now. And generally speaking, in times of insecurity, people flock to radical political movements. And when we're talking about Germany, people flocking to radical political movements is something the world has seen before and didn't like. If you know what I mean, Vern. Screwtape in Com knows what it's all about. He says, you got a hankering for fresh vice first? Which is a sausage that's only available in Munich before noon, essentially. But Bavarians eat it for breakfast, brunch, early lunch, basically. Anyhow, in times of social stress, people tend to turn to fringe political movements. And if we look at the situation in Germany, we certainly wouldn't be surprised to see that. After all, everybody knows that the major political parties, both of the major political parties, the SPD and the CSU-CDU, have been pretty much completely on board with this energy transition. As far as fringe parties, well, the Greens are the ones who've been pushing it the hardest, and it's their man, Habeck, the vice chancellor, who's been traveling around making speeches about how there's no problem at all, that everything is going to be A-OK, that the Energiewende is a success, and so on. Suffice to say, the highly respected newspaper, Die Welt, has just published an article detailing, with 166 documents, how he has just been flat-out lying. That when he says, oh, all the experts are consulted and they agreed that there was no need to prolong the operation of nuclear power stations, or that operation of nuclear power stations would not actually solve our problem at all, and so we don't need to worry about it. Yeah, they have 166 documents, which show that everyone, including his own advisors, told him pretty much the opposite. And it becomes clear that, you know, this is after 20 years of the Energiewende being national policy, this energy transition being national policy. And it begins to appear that the scientific advisors and so forth have advised every government in the past 20 years that this is just not going to work, that it's going to result in energy insecurity, high energy prices, and serious economic consequences. And if you're really unlucky, people freezing to death in the winter. Because if they told Habeck, I don't see there's any way that they haven't told everybody else in the past 20 years. Which means that the people who actually know what they're talking about have simply been consistently ignored by the politicians. This is the perfect situation for political radicalism to take over a country. That's the outcome you would expect when people realize their politicians haven't just been lying to them, you know, but it's been consistent and destructive in this way. So, you know, so who's left? Well, unfortunately, it's the far right, groups such as the AfD, the Alternative für Deutschland, which is basically the sweepings left over in the political space, all the malcontents and anybody who just doesn't like something about one of the major parties winds up typically in the AfD. So they don't really have a coherent platform, but they do tend to attract the crazies, the neo-fascists and the, immigrants are our problem people and all that kind of people. That's not exclusively what the party is made up of, because it's not coherent in any way. But anyway, I'm not hopeful. I mean, if the winter is particularly mild, they may avoid what happened in Britain in 1973-74. The winter of 73-74 in Britain, as I've repeated many times, right, was a winter in which, owing to a combination of the OPEC oil price increases and a domestic coal strike, Britain was cut back to 3-day work weeks. Severe fuel rationing was imposed. And the only thing that kept the lights on at all were the Magnox first-generation nuclear power stations, of which the last and largest, Vilfa in Anglesey, Wales, had just come into operation. I don't know how anyone could be against nuclear power in Britain after that experience, but the evidence is that lots were. And that's always surprised me, that, you know, even immediately after this demonstration that nuclear energy was vital to the national economy, you had the people trying to stop, and to a great extent succeeding in stopping, the breeder reactor program, the fuel reprocessing program, and so on. It's very strange to me. There's a very, very famous quotation from Edmund Burke from the end of the 18th century, who said, experience is the only school of mankind, and they will learn it no other. I'm beginning to think that Burke was an optimist. Anyway, so I may be giving you some very interesting man-on-the-spot reporting from Munich in the next few weeks. Hopefully things remain calm. That's all I can say. Hopefully things remain calm. Anyway, I'm planning to be back here in the U.S. From the second week of December. We shall see what actually happens. In other news, and I have the fine folks at Generation Atomic, particularly Eric Meyer, to thank for this, I have received the paper punch to use with the button-making machine that I purchased before the Worldcon. I intended at that time to buy the Paper Punch, but it was out of stock, so I couldn't get it. Now I have it, which means that I can make badges. I'm limited to one size. Basically, the design is 56 millimeters across. The actual paper cutout is more like 67, 68. Anyway, but the point is that in the past, of course, I've purchased buttons from a button manufacturer. And to some extent, I may continue to do that, particularly for sizes that this press doesn't handle. But the trouble that arises is that when you're ordering them from somebody, the setup costs are high, so the unit costs are high for small numbers. So prototyping becomes a real problem. Whereas with this, of course, I can look at a I can come up with an idea, I can print out a sheet, I can make the badges, and I can look at them and say, oh, that's no good, and go back and alter it, right? I have a very quick turnaround. And, you know, I can potentially do small batch production on request. If there's a badge that you would like made, contact me, let me know, and we may be able to work something out. You know, if you want one or a handful of something, let me know, and we may be able to work something out, because although my main purpose is to use this for producing propaganda for distribution, I am certainly not at all opposed to a little side business. That's just me. But what do I have to say about that? Well, essentially, so I've been telling people, if you wish to receive propaganda, write to Man and Atom, Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. And people have been sending me self-addressed envelopes. I will even cover the postage. You don't have to even put your own stamp on it. But send me a self-addressed envelope, and I will send it back with some stickers, typically. Now, for badges, they pretty much have to go, the little ones, right, little like 2, 2.5, 3 centimeter ones, I could probably get into a standard mailing envelope without any problem. But the large ones, these 55, roughly, you know, 60 millimeter jobs, really I have to put them in a cushion mailer. And cushion mailers pay parcel prices in the U.S., so at a minimum, sending to a domestic address, it's a little over $5 in postage. And so I pretty much do have to ask for money if you want badges. Now, that being said, I'm not, you know, these, I want to get them out there. I want to get them into circulation. I'm just saying that, you know, if you want to send me $5 to cover most of the postage, right, I will send you to, again, U.S. domestic addresses. For overseas addresses, contact me, right, publius@sdf.org if you don't have any other better way. Contact me and we'll talk about it. Because as it is, as I say, I'm going to be in Germany, I'm going to be bringing a supply of badges with me, and international post from Germany, in many cases, is cheaper than from the U.S. So there are some people I've promised, for example, DVD copies of Lunacy 2, the movie that I was in, which I'll be mailing when I get to Germany, because I can mail them there at a less cost. And also without having to fill out a customs form, which is a hassle and a half, let me tell you. It's like the authorities in the U.S. don't want people communicating with people from other countries, which is always a bad sign. People forget, you know, Stalin cracked down on stamp collectors because they were people who had contacts outside the country. Anyhow, what else can I say about that? Well, basically, again, if you want badges, and you're in the U.S., you know, you can send me $5, paypal.me/PrometheusLives, or put a $5 bill or a check or a money order in an envelope and mail it to me with some note saying, hey, send me some of those badges you were talking about, and I will happily send them back to you by return of post. The only problem is, if you do that now, it'll be, you know, they say allow 4 to 6 weeks for shipping and handling. Well, yeah, that's what's going to happen, because I'm going to be out of town, and so when I come back, so sometime around December 9th, I'll be picking up my mail. So if you can wait until then, right, I'm not saying, you know, send it now if you want, but you're not going to be getting any response until then, unfortunately. That's just the way it is. You know, nothing is as convenient as it could be in the best of all possible worlds, right? You know, Voltaire's Candide here, right? Anyway, where was I going with this? Oh, yes, I know. I've got a little booklet, a notebook, where I write down my show ideas. And, of course, for some reason, I never have it with me when I start my show. Here it is. Yeah, sorry, that was me rattling the baggie that I filled with badges working at the badge press yesterday. Now, what do I have written down in the little notebook, those things that I should mention? Let's see, other than intellectual property is a misnomer because the objects of the intellect are neither alienable nor divisible. Let's see. So yes, I talked about the role of creativity, play, and leisure in the sciences a bit last time. I think it's vitally important, really. We must have leisure. We must have scope for creativity and play if we want to continue building culture and civilization. It's very important. Let's see. I spent some time a couple of weeks back filling out tax forms, which should not exist. What I mean is, they're simultaneously tedious and confusing, which is a combination which should not occur. It's the exact opposite of creativity, leisure, and play. Simultaneously tedious and confusing. I think I mentioned the edible nuclear waste candies that I received from a gentleman in Britain by the name of Tim Hunkin, who had them made by a candy company as a prize to be dispensed by an arcade machine that he built. He builds arcade machines. It's one of many things that he's done. He produced a TV program years ago, or was involved in a TV program years ago, presented might be the word I want, called The Secret Life of Machines. Anyway, he had a very interesting experience on his, which is described on his website, where he tried to build a wind-powered device which would basically move a sign around on this amusement pier in the south of England, near the Sizewell nuclear power station, actually, where he has an arcade. And he describes all the travails he went through trying to get the wind power system to do what he wanted, and how he finally realized that he was barking up the wrong tree entirely, because people come to the amusement pier when it's bright and sunny outside, not when it's windy, not when there's heavy weather. And so he replaced the wind generator with a, you know, solar panel and so on, And he said that that works perfectly. And this is a, I like to keep drawing this lesson that when talking about energy solutions, you have to talk about patterns of energy demand. And he finally realized that people don't come to the amusement pier on blustery days, they come on nice sunny days. So solar makes more sense than wind in that situation. And like I say, I think that's a very important lesson. Again, I keep saying, if people use energy to heat their homes, maybe you shouldn't be talking about doing that with solar, because in the winter and at night is when it tends to be cold. All about matching demand with consumption. Anyway. I should mention I've bought a variety of little bits and bobs of nuclear memorabilia that I've talked about on this show and that I use in my presentations to the public at maker spaces and science fiction conventions and everywhere in between. And some of this stuff is jewelry. And so a piece of jewelry that I purchased recently is a stick pin from a German company that was formed to handle nuclear fuel, basically, nuclear fuel cycle activities. But of course, because it's German and it was nuclear and chemical, the company wound up being called Nukem, N-U-K-E-M. So now I have a really nice stick pin that says Nukem on it. maximum confusion. There was a quite disturbing news item earlier in the week that Russia had written a letter to the United Nations Security Council, which of course Russia is a part of, warning that Ukraine was preparing to use a so-called dirty bomb, a radioactive dispersal device, to falsely accuse Russia of using tactical nuclear weapons. Pardon me. This is very disturbing to me, because it seems like a declaration of intent. Basically, Russia saying, we're going to do X, but we're going to claim that somebody else is doing another thing just to muddy the waters, to give ourselves plausible deniability. And the reason why I say that is this. The specific scenario that Russia was warning against is something that is complete nonsense. For two reasons. Firstly, even a tactical nuclear weapon has an explosive force of thousands of tons of TNT. It's fairly easy to verify whether or not someone has set off a bomb that large. It causes ripples, you know, firstly it causes damage on the ground, which could be well documented. Secondly, it causes ripples in the atmosphere, and there are seismograph and atmospheric monitoring stations all around the world listening for those kinds of sounds that are produced by large explosions. We have satellites in orbit, the Vela satellites, the purpose of which is to monitor all over the world for the distinctive flashes produced by nuclear explosions. Basically, the only thing that can fool these detection mechanisms is a meteorite, which under some circumstances could produce the same effect, but of course won't have the associated radioactivity. So the other part of it that makes no sense is that there's no way that a so-called dirty bomb, a radioactive dispersal device, basically a few grams typically of, at most, of radioactive substances stolen from somewhere, packed into a tube with some dynamite and set off, which as the even the United States government, their official statement about these things for years, you can find it on the internet, is that there's very little danger to the public from such a device. The main danger is from the panic that it would cause. Anyway, one of these devices could not in any reasonable way simulate a nuclear explosion. And that's simply because there are thousands and thousands of laboratories in the world. In fact, I have most of the necessary equipment myself. There are thousands and thousands of laboratories in the world which can do gamma ray spectroscopy. Given a sample of radioactive material, they can tell you what's in it. Now, a radioactive dispersal device that contains, you know, 10,000 curies of, let's say, radio cobalt stolen from an old cancer clinic, And as happened in Joyana, Brazil, back in the 80s, if someone had taken that and packed it into a bomb with some dynamite and blown it up, you know, again, if someone had collected the resulting material, they take it to a lab, do some spectroscopy on it, and it shows up clearly as one single isotope, you know, cobalt-60. Well, it's clearly not the result of a nuclear explosion, which produces large quantities of fission products, and has quite a distinctive fingerprint. You can even tell whether it's uranium-235 or plutonium-239 that was used in the bomb. Again, this is something that I have most of the necessary equipment and information needed to do. Me. Now, the Ukrainians, in order to simulate this, would have to have large quantities of very fresh fission products that could only be obtained by suddenly reprocessing in a lab facility they don't have, hundreds of kilograms of freshly discharged reactor fuel. The whole thing is absolute nonsense, and the only reason you'd even make a claim like that would be to give yourself some cover and say, oh no, it's not us, if you did something. And so I'm very, very worried by that now. So that's something that you should bear in mind as the world situation deteriorates. Blah. And other than that, I just wanted to talk about something very briefly. Just put an idea in your mind. As I tend to do, this is me, that I talk about space and atomic energy a lot. And I think they're very, very important. And I think they have some very big implications. And it's funny, people talk a lot about suppressed technologies. But, of course, I mean, I think it's fairly obvious that in terms of what's been, quote, suppressed, you know, secret inventions that allow you to obtain free energy from the Earth's magnetic field or whatever, whoop-de-doo, right? People are always claiming that this, that, or the other thing has been suppressed. But when you look at it functionally, right, functionally atomic energy and space travel have been suppressed. If you look at where we were in 1970, where we expected to be in 1980, we're not even there yet. And that, you know, and there's very, very public measures of suppression taken. You know, I was watching a video of the recent Thorium Energy Alliance conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that was the awards ceremony at the end, and they were talking about this new museum exhibit that they had built and donated to the Museum of Atomic Energy in Albuquerque. And they were talking about the great difficulty they had in even getting photographs from Oak Ridge to use in the exhibit. And the phrase that the guy used, which I thought was very good, was, "Non-proliferation begins with no." So, you know, and I keep thinking about this because it's not a controversial statement to say that capitalism is the dominant economic system in the world today, and that capitalism is based on scarcity. That scarcity, this is a standard economist statement that's all about the fact that human needs and wants exceed the capacity to meet them, and so choices have to be made, and so our economic systems are all about allocating scarce resources. Space travel and atomic energy go a long way towards eliminating scarcity. On the other hand, capitalism often creates artificial scarcities. Things like advertising are intended essentially to make up for the fact that the scarcities that actually exist in the world aren't convenient for the people who have something to sell. So it's not surprising to me that space travel and atomic energy, which can do away with fundamental scarcities of materials and energy and so on, face a lot of opposition, even from people like the Greens, who often claim to be anti-capitalist. Anyway, you've been listening to A Step Farther Out on SDF, a non-radio, And if you'd like to support these broadcasts, again, you can send some money, paypal.me/PrometheusLives. But I look forward to receiving your cards and letters. Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas, 76101, United States of America.